We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
The majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Today is a Built for Tough Bears Monday on The Score, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built for Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. We talk with Anthony Herron at 1 o'clock on every Monday after a Bears game day. He is nice enough to come and hang out here with me in studio. You can watch him on Fox 32. He does all of their post-game stuff. You can listen to him on Sirius XM 372 every morning with Jason Goff. You can watch him on Pac-12 Network, although you were off this weekend, right? You actually got to be at home this weekend?
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, we had a whole lot to get done with the remodel we got going on and some stuff happening with the family.
First of all, we know what you were doing this weekend, man. It wasn't no remodel. You weren't taking Bishop out for a walk. You were in front of your couch watching Iowa knock Minnesota off. That's what you were doing.
There was plenty of that happening, too. There was, no doubt. It's crazy how that the magic of certain stadiums ends up working out. And it's like, what? I think 5 out of the last 6 times a top 7 team has come into Kinnick Stadium, they've left with an L. It's kind of crazy. And even a lot of times, I was joking with our buddy Pete Futek about it during the week. We were texting back and forth. It's like, yeah, this feels like one of those quintessential Iowa upsets. It's likely to happen. You know, Minnesota, they certainly have an execution advantage coming in, but Iowa's been a good enough team this year, and they're going to be at home, is going to be under the lights, and they're going to probably get it done. And that's, I don't know, some of that Hawkeye magic.
Explain to me why the Bears didn't get an upset out in L.A.
They're not good. That's certainly a big part of it. And they're not good in too many different phases, and some of them where you can expect a level of regression that's explainable. Like, you know, especially when you look at personnel, I won't even say deficiencies, but personnel that's been lost on defense this year. So just year over year, there's a number of guys in the Bears defense who've already been here playing at a high level with it in this town for this team for several years now. So at a certain point, you think, okay, they're going to take maybe a mild step back. But then you also add in no Akeem Hicks, no Danny Trevathan. Then those are key cogs that you're without, and now you're in a position where they can devote. You know, I thought it was funny, the halftime package that they rolled, just showing, like, here's the 4 pass rush snaps that Khalil Mack had, and he didn't get anywhere near the quarterback. And literally every one of those 4 plays, at least 2 guys touched him. And then sometimes there's a 3rd guy with eyes on him just waiting to see what's going to happen. And I do feel like the Khalil Mack, let's call it a regression for lack of a better term, at least the regression in his productivity, I do feel like, and myself and Corey Wooten went through this on our post-game show last night, just where it seems like there's less force that he's bringing with his rush when he's got multiple blockers devoted to him, where a lot of times when you're doing that, you're still going to be able to collapse the pocket just because you're turning speed into power, but it saps a whole lot of energy. And with the amount of snaps that the Bears defense has played this season, the amount of times they haven't gotten off the field, it does seem like even Mack has gotten to a point where, and it's this small thing, it's just like a finite detail of how you rush the quarterback and how frequently you're willing to rush in a certain manner. But even he, I believe, has been affected by the amount of snaps the defense has had to play, the amount of times where his tongue is hanging on the ground because they're not getting off the field. And so he's staying wide on his rushes more frequently now than he was earlier in the season. And then you've got 2-3 blockers devoted to a guy who's, and we talked about this before, he's 250 pounds. So it's different if you're 290, 300, you're bringing force, power off the edge, J.J. Watt style. You can sustain that for longer throughout a game, without it sapping your energy to the same extent, because he's got to apply so much. You know, it's mass times speed equals impact. And for a guy of his size, with his explosive ability, he has really got to bring everything he can into a power rush to make it as effective as it normally is with him. So even a guy like Khalil Mack, I believe we're seeing the effects on him. Not that he's playing badly. I mean, he's still one of the stellar players in the National Football League, but the way he's playing the game is even a little bit different now. So that's one finite example of a guy who's still at the top of the food chain in the NFL, how he's even being affected by the lack of execution by so many other guys, not even specifically just the Bears defense, but offensively leaving the defense out there hanging over and over again, the play calling of Matt Nagy, the execution, the coaching staff, the preparation, all those other things. Even Khalil Mack isn't at the same level right now, just not the lack of sacks, but even how he's specifically playing the game.
I want to ask you a big picture question about the offense. Why doesn't it function the way that Matt Nagy wants it to?
I think the way I phrased it, I said this going into the game to Dan and Connor on Thursday. Matt Nagy calls the game for the offense that he wants as opposed to for the offense that he has. And I do believe there's been some growth with that throughout the season. It hasn't been consistent enough. I don't know why we didn't see J.P. Holtz in the I formation last night. I mean, he was on the field. He got some work. What's been their most successful offensive formation in recent weeks? It's been the willingness, despite what I think it was it Schlereth or Moose on one of the broadcasts a few weeks ago. We said, yeah, Matt Nagy told us during the week, they didn't bring me in to run the I formation. And then that game and several games beyond that, they began to run the I formation, not even just the straight I, but the I near, the I far, where you have Holtz in there at the fullback and he's offset. And it did enhance their ability to run the football. For whatever reason, last night, we didn't see it. He got a few snaps out there, but we didn't see him lined up in that eye. We certainly didn't see it as a consistent diet of the Bears' rushing attack. And maybe it's because David Montgomery didn't get the start because his ankle was messed up, but then he still got plenty of touches. So within those touches, just because they didn't practice during the week, why can't you keep the run game operating in the same manner that was being successful for you in recent weeks? That, the third and short offense, and the Bears were actually, and nobody cares to hear it after the way the offense ended up, Bears were good. Mitch Trubisky was good early in the game on third down. The tempo that they started the game with, I thought, was an effective adjustment.
I like that a lot.
Unfortunately, it stalled out once they got around the 30-yard line, and then it leads to long field goal opportunities. The two that were attempted were both missed. So then you got the defense for the Rams leaving the field with their fists in the air, feeling like they did something, because that's just what we do defensively. Even if you mount a 12-play drive on us, you miss that field goal, buddy. We're running off the field like, yes, win for us. It's just a psychosomatic sort of thing, even though we didn't have a good series. But if you miss that execution on the field goal, then we're going to act like we did something, even when we really didn't. So while the Bears were mounting offense early in the game, for the first time in quite a while, it was still coming away empty. Even after takeaways from that Bears defense early, which they haven't been getting lately, it still amounted to nothing on the scoreboard. And then that's where things mount. And then you get back to drop passes by Gabriel, and this is one of the things that, to me, Lawrence, I know I'm kind of rambling on you here, but there's so many things that came out of last night's game that just confound me. This wide receiver core was one of the best catching wide receiver corps in the National Football League last year. It's a part of why a lot of folks felt like Mitch Trubisky was still an abomination even last season, where the offense was more effective, where they put more points on the board, where he didn't turn the football over look at the numbers for the receiver drops, though. They don't drop passes, and they catch difficult passes. Like, that was their MO last season. So the evaluation of the talent coming in with essentially the same receiver core this season, that's not a place you expect regression. Like, there's spots where you can expect maybe a little regression for a guy who either gets a little longer in the tooth, like a Kyle Long, or a defense has been together for several seasons, even with a few key pieces that don't execute at the same level, or just the takeaways they had last year, the points they put on the board. You can't expect that season over season. You don't expect a receiver core that, even when there wasn't separation in 2018, they caught the ball effectively at a rate at the top of the NFL throughout the entire season. Now this year, they're leading the National Football League in drops. It's confounding. It's unexplainable. I don't know what that points to, but it's here, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's a huge part of why the Bears offense continues to stutter and stumble along.
Talking Ball with Anthony Herron. You're listening to a Built for Tough Bears Monday here on The Score. I'm Lawrence Holmes. I've been fixated on this for the last few weeks, and I understand that sometimes when I get fixated on stuff, it can be bothersome for people. Matt Nagy keeps getting asked about play calling. He looks at it as an affront to his ability to call plays. I look at it a little differently. I don't think that right now he's doing an effective job of managing his sideline. From the time that they get onto the field until the time they get off, there have been communication busts. There have been chain of command busts that have happened. There have been sorts of issues where I wish he could play more of a role of a CEO on the sideline than just the genius play caller that they seem to want to paint him as. How chaotic is a sideline? And when do you know when a head coach has a good grasp of what's happening around him?
It's absolutely bonkers. And no matter how much you watch NFL films, no matter how much anyone, you know, turns on some of these behind the scenes vignettes that you get of life on the sideline of the National Football League, you always got to remember, regardless of the thing with Sam Darnold with the "I'm seeing ghosts," which is really a fairly innocuous comment anyway. It's a fairly common NFL jargon that's out there for when you're just not seeing the field well. But even with that slipping through, everything you see is combed through and edited by the National Football League. So you still don't have a full sense, regardless of how many, you know, behind the scenes vignettes you watch, for how chaotic it is. It's bedlam on an NFL sideline, because not only do you have more bodies, by comparison to any other professional sports, you have more bodies on an NFL sideline than you do compared to any other sport. But then also just the sheer testosterone that's there, that's sort of required for excellence in professional football. All the emotion, all the times that you might have a camera who's kind of peering in on a moment and you're thinking that it's this heated exchange or teammates are going at it, and they're really not. They might be saying "I love you" in the most angry looking way possible, just because that's what happens when you're in a National Football League game. You got all these dudes out there going at it out there in situations of conflict between the white lines. Then you come to the sideline and you don't immediately shut that off on the sideline. You're still in conflict mode mentally and emotionally. And so all those things enhance the chaos of it between the bodies and just the vigor that everyone's just kind of existing with for that 3 hours of the game. As a head coach, to be able to manage that, to oversee it, there's so many levels to how you need to do that effectively. And I do think Matt Nagy, just with the tenor of his players, their attitude, their regard for him, I do think all those things operate at a pretty high level, because I think they respect him. Like, you know, like the Mark Trestman example is starting to come up, for a guy who we thought he was a guru year one, and then year two happened, and it's like things fell off the rails. I do think second year of Mark Trestman, we had more of a sense for the fact that the players didn't necessarily respect him, regard him in the same manner. Like, I was with the Atlanta Falcons 2004-2005. Jim Mora Jr., now he was a defensive guy, but in a similar manner, he was the young, hot stud coach who had this youthful sort of vigor to him, but also could exude a level of machismo that had some gravitas to it, enough in the NFL locker room, even though he was a young guy. So like a lot of us in the Falcons locker room would talk about Jim Mora as a guy who, man, that guy, his energy, and back then it was a far more positive vibe. That's dissipated a bit as he's been through the ringer over the years. But Jim Mora Jr. was a guy who was like, you know what? That dude's probably going to be a college coach at some point too, just because of the way he carried himself. And Matt Nagy, I believe he's got a similar balance to what Jim Mora had back then, where he's young, he's vibrant, he's positive, but he still can carry the respect of the room as he addresses the team. So all those things, I believe, are positive for Matt Nagy. The problem is there are still a lot of those management issues that take place during the game. And we're not quite sure what's going on with field position, what's going on with timeouts, what's going on with short yardage decisions, what's happening with personnel at different points, and how locked in he is on those personnel decisions. Now, I don't subscribe. I stayed up even later than I should have last night with my early morning show tweeting about this a little bit. I don't at all subscribe to any kind of conspiracy theory about whether or not they're inventing this Mitch Trubisky injury. It just doesn't make sense. There's no reason to do it. If you're going to bench Mitch, just bench him. I mean, who's going to challenge you on it? It's Chicago. They've been waiting for Mitch to be benched for months now. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, why even go that route as opposed to just sitting him down? If you admit defeat, you want to pull him out of the game because you think Chase is your better option, then do it. Most of the folks in the city are going to pat you on the back for it at this point. So you don't lose anything by just honestly saying we don't want Mitch to be the quarterback. My interpretation is he had a hip issue, whatever it is, hip pointer, hip strain, whatever. They tried to allow him to play through it. Early in the second half, it was still going well. As the second half wore on, it was not. They decided to pull him at that point. I think it's a worthwhile question. I can't get my mind wrapped around what would be the purpose behind it. Who does it help? Who does it save to invent an injury for a guy who a lot of folks are waiting on you to bench anyway?
I'm not sure that, you know what, I want to get
into this.
I've
been rambling. I didn't leave us some time for that.
No. I would like to get into it because I sometimes think that we give them too much credit as far as them concocting something and mm-hmm. saying, oh, well, this will get them off the trail. We'll do this. And I just wonder if it was just one of those things where I think that you're right. Like in retrospect, I think he's hurt. He can't play as well as we would have liked for him to play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get him out of there. Okay. I'm willing to accept that. But I do think that throughout the last few months, there's been enough smoke that there should be some fire when it comes to the fragility of 10. And if you thought that in one particular game, you needed to bench him for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
you might need to go back to him, that would be impetus enough for you to be like, well, you know you're hurt, right?
just like doing the Jedi mind trick on him. Just waving their hand in his face. Like,
you're hurt.
Your hip bothers you.
My hip does bother me. That's amazing that you knew that. Before I let you go.
I suppose it's possible. I don't know. I don't know who's got the force working like that over there right now, though.
No, you're like a bunch of Siths over there right now. I want to ask you, what would you do about the kicker situation? Because I didn't like Nagy acting as if Eddie's our guy. Eddie, in my opinion, deserves some competition. Even if he wins it, I'm good with him winning. But there should be people there tomorrow.
I think in a different situation, I shouldn't even say it probably would be the case, because they never did that with Parkey last year, did they?
Nope.
Now, they invested a lot more money in Parkey, so there's other factors with that. But for Eddie Pinheiro, where, you know, we went through most of the offseason where it seemed like kicker was the main concern, and then after about a month of the season, like, oh, kicker's the only thing that's not a concern. It turned really quickly on the perception of him in that role. I don't necessarily believe that moving him answers much for you. And if you do that, partly because I don't know what's there on the street that's going to be any better than what you're getting out of him right now anywhere, at least what you have a sense that you can get
Cody Parkey
out of him. Cody Parkey's on the street. I brought that up on our show last night. Cody Parkey is out there and he is on the street. He is. I was saying this to Shep, man, when we were on during the baseball season, the Parkey move happens and the Jordan Howard move happens. There were a couple of things where they left holes where I'm trying to figure out, all right, how are they going to replace these things? And folks were scoffing at me like, oh, replacing Jordan Howard?
Easy.
So what? Oh, what's the big deal?
He's fat and out of shape.
Yeah, exactly. And replacing Cody Parkey, he is a guy who has been an accomplished NFL kicker. You need somebody. You need somebody to bring in. You still got money invested in that spot, so I know that matters, and it's not that easy. And it's the same thing I was yelling at Connor and Dan about last Thursday, even in moving on from the quarterback. If it happens, which looks like it probably will at some point, at whatever point it does, have an answer is my thing. Just have an answer. If you decide you're moving on from Mitch, if you decide you're moving on from Jordan Howard, if you decide you're moving on from Eddie Pinheiro, just have an answer. Don't move on for the sake of moving on. Don't move on because you're tired of looking at him. Don't move on because you're tired of the city of Chicago asking you about him. Have an answer before you move on, because sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, especially when you're in the meat of the season right now. Bringing in a few other guys to kick during practice, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I wouldn't want to see him release Eddie Pinheiro unless they felt like they had someone else coming in who made sense.
Agreed. If he wins it, he wins it. But he should not feel comfortable walking into Halas Hall.
I don't think he does. I mean, he walked away from the media last night after the game. He definitely looks uncomfortable in a number of different ways. I mean, you know, him amongst a number of guys who aren't getting the job done. I think at this point, Matt Nagy is so scapegoat conscious, aside from James Daniel, it seems, but you know, he probably doesn't want guys to just feel like it's your fault, because so many guys aren't doing their job at the level that needs to be happening right now.
And then Adam Shaheen magically has a foot injury. I'm just saying.
Touche.
That is Anthony Heron. Follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. Congratulate him on his Iowa Hawkeyes knocking off.
No, man, congratulate Anthony Gill. Don't be congratulating me, man.
I left
body parts out there. I haven't even texted this dude. I was waiting until I saw him in person. I went in there. I ignored him. Congratulations, Tony.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
it. Get up out of here. I didn't even know he was going to be texting me last night. Like, what is this we, Fred? Can you join us? Can we get you on tomorrow? What do you mean we? Aren't you gone?
No.
Apparently he's not gone.
He's still here until Black Friday. Right. Apropos.
Good to know.
That he still be here until then. And then he'll start his new gig over at NBC Sports Chicago. And then I apparently now work for him there.
Fox could have reached out. I was happy to.
It's going to be weird when he's like, hey, you got that podcast on? I'm like, Tony?
He'll be like, Kick Rocks.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gill.
Yeah, Mr. Gill.
Mr. Gill.
If you please.
That's Big Ann Heron. That's Tony Gill. I'm Lawrence Holmes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I heard some excellent football stuff. Like if you're an X and O, if you want to know the inner workings of how things should go, I want you to stick around because yesterday, Hub Arkish, Olin Krutz, and Pat Manley had an incredible conversation about how things can be poorly communicated between different parts of a team. Stick around for that next here on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Big thanks to the Chicago Wolves. They sent some swag our way. Shirts for the whole crew. What do the shirts say? I can't reach them here now that I've started talking. But Campy got a shirt. Tony got a shirt. I got a nice note from the Wolves.
It says 11-19-19, 1,000th home game.
Oh, that's right. They've got their 1,000th home game at the Allstate Arena, which is great. You should go see them play, by the way. And if you want to sign a one-day contract with the Wolves and get a $5,000 signing bonus in the process, enter the Sprint Power Play Payday Contest when you visit your Sprint store on Rand Road in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. on December 14th. Yesterday was a weird day, like trying to get ready for the Bears game. I think that I have decided when it comes to Bears games, the easiest Bears game for me is a noon game, a nooner. The one I like the most, though, is the 305 is the better one. 305 game, because it gives me a little bit of time during the day, do whatever I need to get done. And the waiting is the hardest part. Shout out to Tom Petty, RIP. For the night game, it's difficult. So yesterday, I was just sitting there like, well, what am I going to do? So I did my deal. I went to go see my parents, talked X's and O's with them yesterday. I'm sure they were really bored. My dad and I were talking about grips on the ball because ESPN did like a feature on it. So we were discussing it, and then he asked me about Johnny Unitas, and we got into a whole quarterback thing. At one point, I'm getting up and I'm talking about how guys grip the ball and how they move in the pocket. It was really ridiculous and fun too. But I'm driving back and I'm like, what am I going to do with myself? So I kind of retconned my day where it started over once I got home. Took a nap, went and worked out, got ready, and then headed downtown. I say all this to tell you that I was in the car yesterday as the pregame show got underway.
I thought you were going to say me and Campy.
No, I listened to you guys on the way out to my parents' house while I went to Fleckenstein's Bakery and got donuts. I listen to you guys.
Thoughts?
I have notes, but they're not for here, and we're running out of time. So let me get to this. One of the notes would be stop interrupting my ass. How about that? Oh, you're going to get raked through the coals this last week and a half or whatever, Tony.
I am making sure to, at every opportunity, bring up the fact that he's leaving because he hates talking about it so much.
He really does. And you could tell it was uncomfortable yesterday, too, which was great. I thought it was good radio. Shout out to Julie and Maggie. I got caught their show Saturday night. Super good. They were doing some really cool baseball stuff, and it was very enjoyable. Anywho, so I'm listening to Hub and Olin and Patrick talk ball. Like, they got into the weeds quick, which is one of the things I really like about their show. Listen to this segment. Olin is explaining how important communication is. And they were talking about the Detroit game. But Hub was asking about the move between Daniels and Whitehair and the communication that has to happen between center and quarterback. Listen to how all of this stuff can be daunting and can be avoided.
My problem is, and it's something we really haven't talked about, Pat and Hub, but my problem is if you have a communication problem with your center, then if I'm in the building, Pat, the question I'm asking is, how much time have you spent with him, Mitch? Are you guys spending an extra hour a day, an extra hour a morning? Because the center and the quarterback, the communication between those two, okay, on this run play, we're looking for this safety. On this pass play, we're protected here. What I don't see right now, and a fun thing for everybody to do would be this. Pull up a Bears game, turn on a TV copy, and listen to Mitch on third down. And listen to his communication and just watch him. And then pull up the Kansas City Chiefs and watch Mahomes walk to the line of scrimmage, call out who's coming, tell the receivers who makes them hot by the, you'll see the double point. You guys, the line got this guy, that's the single point. The double point is if these two guys come, you're hot. And listen to what Mahomes is saying, because it's the same system, right? So why is it being run differently by one guy than another guy?
I think the answer is simple. I just think he doesn't get it. You know what I mean? I don't think he's smart enough and understands the entire offense yet. I still think he's in the infant stage of trying to learn NFL defenses and also learn Matt Nagy's offense.
Right.
Because you want your quarterback to do that.
Right.
You expect him to do that.
My only issue with that is at the end of the year last year, he was doing it.
Hmm.
I thought. I could be totally wrong, but I thought I seen him make a few points and change some things and point things out and make some checks. And I just don't see him doing that. So I don't mind if you move somebody, Hub, if you tried everything, mm-hmm. if you spent hours with this guy, like, and he kept making the same mistakes. And they might have done that. I don't know that. But all I'm saying is before you move a guy like James Daniels, who could be a really good center, and just say we had a communication problem, which means that's his fault. I want to make sure, like, you're doing the quarterback center meeting an hour before meetings actually start. And then after practice, another hour of you two guys meeting on this third down, the running back's going to be here. Now, if they got two guys here, we may redirect the point to pick that all up.
So when you were playing, go back to that, what were your meetings like with the quarterback? Because I know that you were in the building all the time and the quarterbacks would always be there early. What were your days like on, say, a Wednesday, Thursday when you were getting ready to play the Rams?
Well, the quarterbacks always met before everybody during your special teams mm-hmm. meeting. And you, as a center, you go to those meetings because a lot of times you'd be amazed, Pat, how communication gets lost. Like, I would go to the quarterback meeting and they would say on third down, we're pointing this guy. This is what we're looking at. And then you go to the O-line meeting and the O-line coach is saying something totally different. And I'm saying, I won't say what I said in the meeting, but I'm saying, now, hold on now. Just so we are all on the same page here, they're not saying that in a quarterback meeting. So these things have to get straight, and you'd be amazed how many times it's the coaches messing it up by the way they say it and the way they see it and what they think is going on. But because you're a professional, like you know, Pat, sometimes there's things we got to get right ourselves.
Sure.
And if you're having problems with communication, my question to the Bears, my question, if you give up five sacks against the Lions, like Hub said, who are not very good at getting to the quarterback, my question is the O-line, the quarterback, and the running backs and the receivers, are they holding their own meeting? Are they spending extra time in there to get this right? Because you are the 29th ranked offense in the league. You're averaging 18 points a game. And if we take out the special teams touchdown and HaHa Clinton Dix's touchdown, you're not doing very well. So if you're not holding your own meeting, then there's a problem. And that really falls on the leaders on that offense. Quarterback, center, probably Allen Robinson. I don't know who plays tight end for them now. But whoever the leaders are, they should all be in one meeting room, and they should be talking about blitz pickup, third down. How can we stay on the field? Because we got to stop going three and out.
It was really great stuff yesterday. I mean, you get to hear how smart Olin is. But understanding like how all these things can work together or sometimes go sideways, I think is really valuable stuff. This hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. It is a Built for Tough Monday here on The Score, and we appreciate Ford being the sponsor of a Built for Tough Bears Monday on The Score, even when the Bears look like they looked last night. Back after this on The Score. This segment is being brought to you by Accountemps. If you're swamped with accounting and finance projects, whether you need help for a day, a week, or a month, Accountemps provides highly skilled temporary professionals with skills you need when you need them most. Accountemps, a Robert Half company. Got one more thing for you before I talk with McNeil and Parkins. Eddie Pinheiro, 12-17 so far this year on kicks. He's 2-6, 40-49 yards. People always get excited about the plus 50. You have the leg strength. Where kickers make their money is being consistently good between 40 and 49 yards. And he has not been that. He ranks 26 of kickers who have kicked in at least 10 games this year. It's not good. And I hope that they do bring competition in. That's not to say that I don't think that Eddie can be a good kicker for the Bears. But they did this last year where they didn't put proper scouting pressure on their kicker. So I hope that Eddie wins a job, but it doesn't seem like the Bears are okay with putting other people in the room to make him win it again. We'll see. I'll talk to McNeil and Parkins about what it is they saw in the Bears game coming up next here on The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.